TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
This is my spot.
All the time. A division of Bell Media.
Let's do it.
It's Mr. Lube Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. On the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us online, wherever you may be, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and the start of Mr. Lube Game Day here on TSN 1290. 6 hours from now, puck drop at MTS Center between the New Jersey Devils and your Winnipeg Jets. We're on with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon, followed by Hustler and Lawless, and then the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show with one Mr. Rick Ralph. And, of course, that segues perfectly into the fact that Rick Ralph is going to join us later on in this program. Haven't had Rick on, so we might as well have a good chat with him, see how things are going at the quarter mark of the season, that sort of thing. Also joining us on the program today from the Bergen Record in New Jersey, Tom Galluti is going to join us, one of Ezzy's favorite guests of all time. Ezzy, it's, are you guys going out for a nice candlelit dinner after the show?
Hopefully he'll come out with us after the game. He's been on the show a few times. He's a great guest. And obviously the Devils are in town, so we're going to break down the game. The Devils lost last night. Marty Brodeur was pulled after, I think, 30 seconds. He let in 3 goals on 4 shots. The third goal wasn't really his fault, but he's struggling, so we'll talk to him a little bit about that. But Richie, we're not expecting Brodeur to be in the lineup tonight anyways. Johan Hedberg's probably going to play. He played for most of yesterday's game. So,
well, that'll be an interesting decision, if what the Devils go do on that. Do they go back to... I mean, the plan was to have Brodeur last night and Hedberg today, but given the circumstances of last night's game against the Wild, do they go back with Brodeur, maybe see if they can regain his confidence, or do they go with Hedberg, of course, affectionately known in Winnipeg as Moose, of course.
Andrew, we should mention, it's not 100% that Hedberg's playing, but based on the fact that Brodeur started last night and Hedberg came in,
that was the plan.
That's probably the logic, but regardless, the Devils are on a road trip right now and struggling. They lost to the Avalanche 6-1. And they're not playing very well right now, so they have to, whoever is in net, the team has to start playing better.
And we'll talk about that game in its entirety, break it down in the typical detail you're used to hearing from on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. The voice you heard before was the one, the only, the Ezra Ginsberg. Richard Pollock is across the table from me. Richie, good morning. We haven't heard from you yet.
I've seen enough of you already, Drew.
Already? Breakfast was enough?
Yeah, it's too much.
Too much? Okay. Well, that's about right. We only have another, 8 or so hours to hang out together. So
Richie, if every Saturday morning Joel Marcoux hosts the Breakfast with the Best on TSN 1290, yeah. When you have breakfast with Drew, I thought that's Breakfast with the Best.
We're never on that show, so good to be the best.
It is Breakfast with the Best when Richie and I get together, as anybody, our server today can attest to. We got the official stamp of approval when she said, "You guys are my favorite table so far this morning."
That's true, and then we ran out on our bill.
Then we slugged her and ran away from the table. You know, it was a good combination there. But
Drew pulled the car up, we ran off. But no, tonight's game is going to be interesting, Drew, and it's been an interesting week for the Jets. I have some thoughts, obviously, on the Ottawa. We're going to talk about that, I think, in the next segment, but Ottawa and Phoenix. But tonight is a game they have to have. And before we break this game down in detail, just simply say a team playing the night before and having to travel into town, getting here this afternoon or late last night, whatever it may be, a team that hasn't played very well and is in the midst of a road trip, and you're at home and you've had yesterday off, you have to win that game. That's simple. And there's all this talk about this team, you know, talking about playoffs. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but if they do think they're going to make the playoffs, they have to win games like this. And there's articles, I think Sean Gordon wrote about it in the Globe a couple days ago. Maybe 89 points gets in this year. There's a lot of parity. There's a lot of pretty bad teams out there. I mean, that's what I call it. Some say parity. Some just say bad quality of hockey. And you might be able to squeeze in with that kind of point total. So if that's the case, you need to get points on the board against teams that, in reality, aren't very strong. And you've got Detroit and Boston in 2 of the next 3 games after this one. Both teams are better than you. And both teams likely will win, so you have to win these games.
Well, before we get into that, let's look back at last night in the NHL, and we're going to start about 800 kilometers, is that about what they are, Minnesota?
Well, we're not Google Maps, Drew, so...
Yeah. Sorry, Drew. I'm okay.
About
800, my computer out
about
of my
800 kilometers south of us in
Drew, all that matters is how many kilometers are we away from Kentucky, because I'm biking there.
That's good, good. Again, Ezzy, what makes you think you're invited to my wedding? Yeah. That's the part we haven't figured out yet.
I haven't gotten an invitation.
No, so. Not at all.
Actually, the other day, my dad said he was going to come.
Didn't we repeal your save the date? I thought that's what we did. We repealed your save the date invitation. Minnesota, the Devils were in Minnesota last night, and as Ezzy alluded to, the Devils got off to a poor start, and the Wild ended up winning the game 4-2. Actually, Devils started, they had a 1-0 lead 3 minutes into the game. But within 5 minutes after that, the Devils were down 3-1.
Minnesota native Parise scored the first goal, and there's obviously people in Minnesota, all they want to talk about is Parise being a UFA and maybe signing there in the offseason.
Right. Well, I mean, it's...
Who would want to sign in Jersey is the question.
That's a fair question. But anyways, the Wild went... the Wild, I mean, still the surprise team of the NHL so far this year. I mean, they're at the top of the Western Conference standing, which is, you know, unbelievable if you had told me that. Actually, at the top of the NHL right now, 35 points, leading the NHL.
Read me the top five teams in the NHL right now. It's hilarious.
It is somewhat. Well, I mean, the top four are reasonable.
Okay, you've got Toronto and Florida in the top 10.
Well, yeah, no. I mean, Minnesota's the best team in the NHL right now with 35 points. Then you have Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh at 34 points, which is
that's
reasonable.
They're the best team in the league.
Detroit and Chicago both have 33 points. Boston, the Rangers, Philly, Dallas, St. Louis all have 31 points. And then there's
the Leafs.
And then there's the comedy with the Panthers and the Leafs.
Well, Dallas and Minnesota is too. I mean, let's just that's when people have
St. Louis too.
Give them credit for what they've accomplished thus far, but let's not read too much into everything right now.
Actually, it's undeniable that there has been parity in the NHL for quite some time, even before the lockout. And especially after the lockout, Minnesota deserves a lot of credit. Mike Yao is a rookie head coach, and he's done a really good job. Former assistant with the Penguins, and you know the Wild, of course, picked up Heatley and Setoguchi, and they've been playing well. But you're right. I mean,
the goaltending's doing it. Backstrom's been unbelievable.
But as far as the expectations going forward in the West and the East, we're going to get back into the East a little bit later. And throughout the show, but they're in a weak division right now. They're beating up on Colorado. They've got Edmonton. Vancouver's not off to the hottest start. And I'm not taking anything away from them, but this goes back to, you know, when we were doing our quarter season, grades and rankings and all that. We have to wait and see. And by the way, the article that Richie was talking about, I read that too by Sean Gordon. I think I've got it up here, and it was about fun with early NHL playoff math. And the thing. Going back to the Jets, is it doesn't really matter where you're at now. If you don't do something with the main bulk of the season, is December, January, February. If you're going to be a couple of games under 500, okay, that's not bad now. You're only a few points out of the playoff spot. But if you're come February, if you're 4 or 5 points out of a playoff spot, that's a lot tougher to make up. And the Jets will have to go on a 75 percent winning percentage type of run if they're in that position.
And that's going to happen.
Richie's cynicism shining through early on the program here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Well,
Mr. Lube game day here on TSN 1290.
It's not going to happen.
Let's continue looking back at last night in the NHL. Go to Buffalo where the Sabres continue their sort of early season struggles again with a caveat attached to that. Detroit went in there and handled them easily 4-1. They scored 3 first period goals, the Red Wings did. And Detroit is just a good team that continues just to take care of their business. Everyone's always pointing to the year where they're going to have a setback, and it still hasn't happened.
Well, it's incredible the age of those guys, all these plus 30 guys just looking great and looking fresh. And Mike Babcock deserves credit for that and keeping them fresh.
Mm-hmm.
He's done numerous things to be able to keep Nicholas Lidstrom from... incurring a lot of contact in his own zone, and he's mapped out ways to improve his team. I think that's why he's one of the best coaches in the league. That team is just so good in transition too. If you make turnover, if you make mistakes and turn the puck over, like yesterday when they were just, I think they turned inside out on Marc-Andre Gourgani, I think for the third goal, and it was just the puck's in the net before you turn your head. And Jimmy Howard's also played extremely well.
We unfortunately don't get to see Detroit live in Winnipeg this coming season, but next Saturday, of course, is the Jets at the Red Wings here on TSN 1290. I believe another 6 o'clock start Hockey Night in Canada. Chicago and the Islanders last night went to a shootout, which the Blackhawks won the breakaway competition, and they took the final score 5-4 there. Mm-hmm. Good on the Islanders, having a good showing at least, getting a point in a tough road game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they rode the top line there, and Matty Molson had a goal and an assist. The Islanders showing some heart, and That's about all they can show. That's just a bad team. And Chicago taking them obviously lightly, but pulling out the 2 points against the non-conference opponent, so they'll take it and run.
Yeah, exactly right. In Colorado, another game that went to a shootout. The Avalanche defeated the St. Louis Blues 3-2 last night.
And don't adjust your radio dial. The Colorado Avalanche are on a winning streak. They beat the Devils, and now they beat the Blues in a shootout. But
well, you know, guys, honestly, it's important to remember that no matter how poorly they play, they have that really high first-round pick this year.
No, they traded that to Washington.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Darn it all.
That was a good trade then, and even a better trade now.
Yeah, no, it was still the one of the... Greg Sherman should be fired. The GM of the Avalanche could very well be fired strictly on the heels of that trade.
And there were rumblings, Richie, that both of them, they're going to wait till the end of the season and fire both of them.
But it's so funny how they talk about like Pierre Lacroix like running that team or somehow still having a play. I feel like it's like Inspector Gadget, or what's the guy's name?
Dr. Claw?
Yeah, sits in the back and makes these decisions, and then people take the brunt of the criticism for him.
Yeah, like...
Well, I mean, the GM has made terrible trades, and Joe Sacco hasn't done a good job coaching, so...
I don't think Joe Sacco has done a bad job there.
I have to say one thing, and we probably will talk about this... we will talk about this later on in the show when we talk about the coaching firings of this past week. There's a lot of GMs out there who cover their butt by firing coaches of teams they put together that were pretty damn bad.
Yeah, well, when you give the head coach nothing to work with, all of a sudden it's the coach's fault that the team struggles.
And you put it on yourself a bit. And I don't think that, you know, I think at the end of the day when it comes down to is these guys know that it's their job on the line, and then they get the grit of the coach and buy themselves more time. And there's some selfish reasons behind some of these decisions, guys.
Speaking of bad general managers and head coaches on the firing block, we go to Edmonton last night, where the Edmonton Oilers and the Columbus Blue Jackets had a 2-1 lead on the Oilers after 40 minutes and ended up losing 6-3. Five third-period goals for the Edmonton Oilers last night.
Yes. You know, the Oilers obviously looking great, and Ryan Smith looking like he's 25, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins looking like he's 25.
And a third Ryan Jones getting a hat-trick.
Hat-trick last night. He's got 9 goals on the season so far.
He's done a great job in terms of just providing them with a nice mix of that sandpaper element. Obviously he goes, puts the puck on net, and is good in the room. He does a lot of things, and he has a nice mix there of veteran presence. Edmonton's defense surprised me with how proficient they've been, and of course they've got pretty good goaltending, but at the end of the day, I mean, their forwards have been incredible, and whether they beat Jordan Eberle, the aforementioned Nugent Hopkins, Ezier Smith, or Horkoff, and you mentioned before Ryan Jones, and it doesn't end there, guys. Hemsky hasn't even played well. He scored last night, hasn't really played well. What if he gets going? And
3 goals.
Yeah, so
I mean, the Oilers are... I'll tell you what. You know, is it good general manager? Is it being a good general manager, or is it finishing the worst in the league the 2-3 straight years that all of a sudden your team becomes a good team?
You know, and we've talked about this so much on the show. I mean, you're terrible, so you get Hall, who's now injured, obviously. You're terrible, so you get Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
Yeah.
I mean, the Eberle pick was a good pick in terms of he was a little bit later on in the first round. Was he even responsible for that pick? Because, you know, Tambellini pretends like he has some kind of master plan. Ryan Smith was obviously a good acquisition, but didn't he just demand his way to Edmonton?
More or less.
So, I mean, adding guys like Boulanger, that's fine and all that stuff, but adding Cam Barker, like, for every Boulanger, there's a Cam Barker addition and the Happy Boulin addition. So, overall, I mean, you got to see what a guy can do when it gets close. Right now, he's just accumulating talent by being terrible or having guys on his team that he couldn't get rid of because they have terrible contracts. And it's interesting to see what will come of all this.
Very well put. Final game last night in Anaheim. I believe this was Bruce Boudreau's coaching debut for the Anaheim Ducks.
Absolutely.
And they were on the losing end of a 4-3 decision to the Philadelphia Flyers in overtime. Really, you know...
Discipline.
Yeah. I mean, what happened there is Ryan Getzlaff took a double minor. Or he actually took two separate penalties in overtime.
Took a penalty. I guess I forget what it was called, interference or slashing. He
took a penalty in overtime.
Player
for 2 minutes.
In front of him, and he got flat-footed, and he took a penalty. Then he mouthed off the ref, and he got another penalty.
Yeah.
I'll tell you Randy Carlyle was hard on his players and got a lot out of them. But one thing that was a little bit of his Achilles heel as coach of that team was that they were never, ever, ever disciplined. So that's something that Bruce Boudreau certainly is not going to be able to correct in one or two days of practice. But that lack of discipline as he comes to the forefront again.
Yeah, the Getzlaff penalty. I mean.
So I think in the first period there, Drew, they had 5 penalties, and they were up 2-0. So you can't.
They were certainly up 2-0, and they did take Anaheim took 4 or 5 penalties to Philadelphia's 3 in the first period.
The first period, we watched Philly's power play live and in person about 2 weeks ago, and that I know Pronger's injured right now, and that is certainly a huge factor in the puck movement there. But that's a dangerous power. Both units are dangerous.
Yeah, even without Pronger, Claude Giroux right now. you can make an argument, is the MVP of the league. A strong argument. I agree. I mean, Anaheim, it was a decision, and I think we'd all agree the decision was made. Are you going to fire Carlisle or essentially trade
Bobby
and
Ryan.
Bobby Ryan was the guy. They're not going to trade Corey Perry or Ryan Getzlaff. I don't think they, and they obviously decided they don't want to trade Bobby Ryan. But it's really difficult situation there. That line drives the team, and they're struggling.
Yeah.
They're taking penalties. Mm-hmm. They're not doing a good job of leading the rest of the team. You can even, I mean, you've got Timu and Saku, and you know, those are the veteran guys, but really it's a team that is driven by Getzlaff and Perry, and those guys have a little bit of an impact, but...
And I would encourage you to hit up ESPN and read Gare Joyce. Great article. A great writer, Gare Joyce. You have that book. You read the...
The Punch-Up, the book about the world, the World Junior Brawl between Canada and Russia.
There's a book about that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's a fabulous book. I'll lend it to you.
And I've read
the entire book. That
actually, on tape?
Get it to me on audiobook, Jerome. I'll read it.
Can I interject here?
Sure.
The book has been in Drew's bathroom. It's flagged.
It's flagged. Flagged at Brentano's.
Yeah.
How do you know that? Have you been in my bathroom?
Let's talk about the that article though after the break.
Okay, let's go to break. You're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day here on TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by the good people at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Of course, if you are looking for a place to go on New Year's Eve, Rumors would be a great destination. Trust me, I've spent a couple of New Year's Eves there, and you always have a great time at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Call the club 488-4520 for some more information about that. Richie, how's the candy?
Terrific.
Yeah, good candy?
Some of the best candy I've ever had.
Really? That's some good candy.
Richie likes candy.
Let's talk about the Devils and the Jets. The Devils make their first appearance in Winnipeg this year.
And last.
No, they come
one
back
more,
another
one
time,
more.
And they come
Sorry.
Back in January.
I forgot we're in the Eastern Conference.
That's
for
right.
Some
we,
bizarre
we see the,
reason.
We see the Devils four times. We've seen them already once this year. In Jersey, we had the pleasure of being there about a month ago yesterday, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Sure. Okay.
I left my heart in New Jersey.
You left her? No, your heart in New Jersey?
Sorry, wallet.
Yeah, your wallet. Your dignity.
Pride.
Yeah, all sorts of things that were left in New Jersey that day, unfortunately. So we've seen the Devils. We, you know, the player that jumped out at me the first time that the Jets played the Devils was, and he's had a good rookie season, I believe, is Adam Henrique.
Yes, played very well.
Let's start with the conversation with him, as he's the player that probably most people might see tonight if he performs to how he's been performing. Hmm. And they'll say, who's that guy? You know, where's he coming from?
He's a left-handed shot. He's the youngster, played for Windsor Spitfires, that powerhouse team that had the likes of Taylor Hall on it. Really good in transition, really good hands, really quick, good first step, good skater, dangerous off the rush. He's got good skill. He's going to be a good player, guys, and the Devils haven't drafted that well lately, and this is one that they have drafted well, and that's certainly going to help this team. Cheap talent and a guy who can play in your, you know, an offensive role on your squad.
He's got 16 points through 21 games so far. He was a third-round draft pick of the Devils, 82nd overall, in 2008. This is his rookie year, as we've said.
Yep.
This Devils team is certainly got two very skilled players in Ilya Kovalchuk and Zach Parise. And then after that, there seems to be a bit of a drop-off talent-wise.
With Travis Zajac, and I'll defer to
with Travis
Zajac. You've seen more of the Devils than I have this year.
Yeah, I mean, you can't sugarcoat it that Ilya Kovalchuk has been bad this year.
Better than last year.
Well, I mean, yeah, especially in the first half. Marty Brodeur is not playing very well, and Johan Hedberg is really the number one goalie. I know that sounds shocking, but Brodeur hasn't been good this year. And the Devils are basically a team that is a year before rebuilding, in my opinion. You've got basically Patrick Elias, who is not just leading the team in points, but he's the only guy that's been consistent offensively. And I guess the wild card, we mentioned him a little bit earlier, is Zach Parise. Missed basically the entire year last year, and he's been slow to come back. He's not the same Zach Parise that he was of 2 years ago, and he's really the guy who has to lead the team. And the Devils have you know, they've gone through a terrible year last year, and Pete DeBoer has, let's be honest, been a little bit slow to bring his new system into New Jersey. And great coach, another guy who was a coach in the OHL, and played for the coached the Florida Panthers, but the Devils are looking basically from the outside on a playoff spot, and it's been tough for them. They've lost two games in a row. They're going to play the Jets tonight. I think this is a game that the Jets can win. The game that we saw in New Jersey, Richie, Adam Henrique did get the two goals, and he was very good.
Uh-huh.
He's a very good player, and he's developed, I think, a lot faster than Lou Lamoriello thought he was going to develop, because they've tried to develop Jakob Josefsson and Matthias Tedenby, and those guys have come along a little bit slower, and he's been a nice surprise. Adam Larson's been a very good surprise.
I don't think Larson's been a surprise, though.
Well, maybe a surprise, but, I mean, in that he's...
But they drafted him, you know, third overall or whatever they drafted him.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the goaltending.
Let me get into that for
a second. Okay, sorry.
Well, we can get into goaltending if you want.
Well, I don't want to interrupt your thought process.
One of the issues I've seen with this team is, I mean, they had added Talander last year, and they added Volchenkov, and they have Larson, who's really not as offensively talented as maybe some expect him to be from that high of a slot.
Got to give him some time, though.
No, of course, but I'm saying like ceiling.
Yeah, he's not Nicklas Lidström.
Right, he's not, and you know, it's like Hedman. They think offensive talent. Well, you know, he's good, really good, but he might not be the offensive machine people thought. Maybe thought he was going to be when he was 17.
I agree with that,
and I think that points to an issue. They have a lack of puck movers on the back end, and I think when you have poor goaltending that you just had this year, and you know, Marty Berger has been restricted by the trapezoid back there, which is a stupid rule. But even so, you have Marty, you know, back when they were really successful, and there's a lot of differences now, but you know, you got Berger passing the puck to Rafalski and to Niedermeyer, and guys who got the puck up the ice quick. Even Stevens, he wasn't as offensive as he was in the 80s, but the puck was off the stick and it was up quick.
Yep.
You have guys now who aren't as proficient with the puck, and I think that hurts them. Whether it be Salvador or Volchenkov, and maybe even to a little bit lesser extent Talander. But even so, I mean, all those guys. I mean, you have guys like Green and Larson who can move the puck a bit, but you don't have great guys back there who can key the transition game. And I think that's an issue that plagued Ottawa until recently. They had a lull of losing the guys like, you know, Char and Redden, and not having it until they recently got Carlson and things like that. The puck never got to the guys it was supposed to. And the transition offense was hurt by that, and the sustained offense was hurt by that. And then you can't score, and then you get behind, and then you're losing, and then the other team clogs the zone, and then your offense really can't get going. And I think all these things are significant factors in the reason why they've struggled.
But you're saying it starts with the back end and the lack of the transition game.
And I think, you know, they got lucky last year, obviously, being so bad unplanned and then getting Larson. But even so, they haven't addressed the back end issues, and they haven't replaced the puck movers they had back there. This is a different game, guys.
Yep.
I mean, Volchenkov and Talander and Salvador and those guys, I mean, so a fair amount of money locked, too much money locked up in guys who aren't going to move the puck. In this day and age, it's all about speed and skill.
Which is something, you know, transitioning this over to the Jets. On the back end, the Jets are pretty proficient in moving the puck out of their own zone.
For sure.
I mean, you guys got Bogosian, who I keep saying, you know, week in, week out, has continued to impress me with his play.
Absolutely. He's improved every week.
Yeah. And Byfuglien, I mean, we know what Byfuglien does with the puck and everything else in his transition game.
He's as good with the puck when he has it.
Right.
I mean, the puck goes, he has the right intentions for the most part.
Yeah.
Enstrom's good with the puck.
Even Flood and Kolda have not been bad on the transition.
Flood's
game.
Better than Kolda.
Yeah.
But they're not great.
Right.
Hainsey's very good with it. Oduya's not as bad as people think.
But the Jets are working at it.
Oh, they can definitely move the puck into their own zone.
Let's talk about the Devils goaltending 25 minutes past the hour here on Mr. Loop Game Day. Jets Devils, 6 o'clock tonight on TSN 1290.
Marty's a gatey, man. I mean, what do they expect from him anymore?
Well, I mean, Marty has played, both goaltenders have played 13 games.
Age is only relevant to a certain point, Ezzy, because you know this, and I'm going to get right in. Hedberg's never been great, so that let's just throw that out
there. Well, he's been a very proficient or acceptable backup.
He's been an NHL
Has he even been that good as a backup?
Well, he's been an NHL
Okay, like he's nothing special.
No, he's not the best backup, but he's an NHL. He's definitely an NHL backup goaltender.
Sure. I guess
his numbers this year are good.
It's been 13 games, true.
Broder's only played 13 games also.
I'm saying, but Broder's a 20-year career to base it on.
Well, how young do you think Hedberg is?
He's not young. He's like 36 or 37, but I'm saying he hasn't been very good throughout his career. He's had moments.
Hedberg's 38.
Good. Yeah, well, there you go.
And I mean, Broder's what? Is Broder 39 now? Yeah.
You're putting on a goaltending tandem with a combined age of 77.
You're asking for trouble. But Broder, I mean, and it pains most people to say this.
He's played 70 games a year.
I agreed.
For 15
he's
years.
Definitely worn
so
out.
That's why age is only, if you're Dwayne Rolison and you were like middling and trying to get your way, you know, to the NHL until you were 30.
He's a young 38 versus an old 38.
Drew, let's put it this way.
Absolutely.
2 years ago when people were looking at Martin Broder and he was playing well at 37 years old and they were saying, oh, Marty Broder is not slowing down. Will he ever slow down? This is the year he's slowing down.
No, he started dropping off the cliff in that overtime game in the playoffs against Carolina when they were up 1-0 with 2 minutes to go, and then they ended up losing 2-1. That's when the, that's been, you can point to that game, I think, as the drop in Marty's play. And I mean, Marty Brodeur is a legend, and he's definitely making a direct line to
my
the
opinion.
To
he's the greatest goaltender of all time.
And you could very well, you could make that argument. I'm not going to dispute you, but I mean, coming into tonight, if he plays, which we're not sure of, he's got a 3.31 goals against average, which is atrocious.
Yep.
He's got an 879 save percentage, which is atrocious. Those are bad numbers.
Those are bad numbers.
I mean, Hedberg's coming in at a 2.18 goals against average and a 920 save percentage.
A lot better.
Now, he's probably playing easier games, in that Hedberg's probably getting the games against the, you know, secondary competition, quote unquote, which is off, which, you know, which is why we've seen a lot of.
Is there a lot of secondary competition anymore, though?
Well, the Jets are secondary competition because everybody plays their
everybody,
backup.
There's a reason why we've seen so many backup goaltenders. It's because other coaches have deemed the Jets to be secondary.
It's like the idea, if you're not the fool, if you're at the poker table, you can't see who the guy to go after.
Guys,
is,
both,
that
of,
guy.
You, both of you guys sitting here know how much I've liked the New Jersey Devils over the year. And Richie was talking about the golden era of the Devils with the guys on the back end like Stevens Danico, Niedermeyer Rafalski. But the team isn't as good anymore. And Martin Brodeur isn't as good anymore. I'm the biggest Marty Brodeur fan there is out there. And I'm not saying that this is his last year, because that's Marty Brodeur makes that decision. But you can't you can't look away from the facts. And the facts are Hedberg's playing better this year, and Marty Brodeur, his play has fallen off. That doesn't take away from anything, because he's still one of the best, or I just said it. I think he is the best, actually.
Assuming
he can't deny it.
Assuming they stick to script and they start Hedberg tonight. He gets a nice ovation from the crowd tonight.
Oh, definitely. Sure. His nickname's the Moose.
Yeah, I mean, this team has been nothing but certainly has shied away. The franchise seems to have shied away from any ties to the old Winnipeg Jets, but they haven't shied away to any old ties from the Manitoba Moose.
Yeah, he'll get a nice ovation.
So I think he'll get a nice ovation tonight. Let's go to break. When we come back on the other side, let's talk about what the Jets have to do to win tonight's contest. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Mr. Lube Game Day on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mr. Lube Game Day here on TSN 1290. Puck drop tonight, 6 p.m. with Dennis Bayak, Brian Munson, Shane Knighty, Rick Ralph gets the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show underway at 5. Hustler and Lawless follow us. I'm Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. And of course, the website is www.illegalcurve.com. Send us some of your tweets. If we like them, we'll read them on air. If we don't like them, well, we probably just won't read them on air.
We'll put them in the recycle bin.
That's right.
Really? So, how did the Winnipeg Jets win tonight's game against the New Jersey Devils? Last time the Jets played the Devils, they were down 2-0 going into the third period. Mm-hmm. Came back with two third period goals to put the game into overtime, where they eventually lost. But they stole a point in New Jersey. I think we all agreed that they stole that point
they
that
did.
Night.
They did.
And we stole our lives leaving New Jersey successfully after the guy was, you know, the entire crowd was chanting kill at us. Mm-hmm. That was at us, right?
Kill the penalty.
I thought it was directed at us. We've spoken about it, but it's a very unique thing they have in New Jersey. Whenever the opposing team has a power play, the entire crowd chants kill.
Is that from The Simpsons? That's what somebody said.
It's originally from The Simpsons, yeah. It's a little bit frightening, though, when you have an entire arena full of people chanting kill.
And as he was just eating his hot dog, he just wanted to chill.
Yeah.
Not kill.
Exactly.
To win tonight, Drew.
What can the Jets take advantage of? What area of the game do they have a definitive advantage of that they can exploit the New Jersey Devils?
I do think that they have, first off, I have to say they have to be disciplined, because we saw them play against Phoenix, and Phoenix and the Devils play similar systems. Now, Phoenix is very, very conservative.
That's a nice word for boring, by the way.
Really boring. But the Devils have more offense and the ability to transition, and Phoenix doesn't have that. So, again, staying within a system, meaning getting the puck in deep, not trying to do too much, because guys like Parise and Kovalchuk are so good in transition and can take advantage with their speed and skill, especially Henrik too. They have a lot of guys up front who can skate. They obviously miss Zajac, but they can skate, and they can put the puck in the net quickly. So turning the puck over the middle has to be something that the Jets take care of the puck. They put it in deep. They take advantage when they can. Another thing is that I think the Jets can use guys like Little, guys like Little and guys like Kane, especially that line, obviously, using their speed wide on this defense can be something that they could take advantage of.
Yep.
Now, guys like Volchenkov would be paired probably up against Kane's line, because I think that's what everybody's keen on, the number one line now. A guy like Volchenkov, for example, plays against a good shot blocker, tough guy. You have to keep your head up, but you can beat him wide, and you can use your speed to be able to get these guys out of position. So I think speed is going to be an issue. And I think also the puck, getting the puck out of the middle and eliminating any kind of bad turnovers, being responsible. I think the decision making of the defense is always a significant factor in whether or not the Jets win or lose.
And I think in that game in New Jersey that the Jets lost, even though they got a point and it was an overtime and they gave up that breakaway was pretty bad.
That's exactly right. Speed and transition, the turnover.
Right. They didn't control the pace of the game. That was, out of the three games we saw, that was maybe the most uneventful game because, you know, there were goals. Eliash did get a goal in that game. But I want to see them control the pace a little bit more. I know that the win against the Phoenix Coyotes on Thursday night was very significant. It was arguably their best defensive performance. And Pavlik, I think, had his best game. But was it actually their best defensive performance? Because they gave up a lot of shots, and they were on edge. I mean, they were lucky to hold. I don't want to use the word luck, but they were maybe holding on to a lead and maybe not necessarily bringing it to the Phoenix Coyotes. So I mean, it wasn't like the Jets played an A+ game. It wasn't a 1-0 masterpiece.
I thought they had a lot better performance against Washington, a team that actually transitions and tries to score, as opposed to Phoenix. I think Phoenix's goal is essentially not to lose the game.
And Phoenix
for Dave Tippett,
Phoenix looked like they were trying to lose 1-0.
Well, honestly, it did. Once they gave up that one goal, they're like, okay, it's a moral victory if we only lose by a goal.
We only lost by one.
Dave Tippett is coach, and within that, you know, that meaning of that word, he's a great coach and he's got that team buying in. But look at what he's got there, guys.
Yep.
He's basically tailored his team to middling veterans who will buy into it, play a really defensive style, never take chances,
and rely on goaltending.
Yeah, and more so just rely on not, you know, mistake free goaltending.
Yep.
Meaning you don't need amazing performances, you just want to make sure the puck hits you. And this is the thing, Izzy. Aside from Boedeker and Turris, there's no young talent in that offensive lineup. And you look at Turris and you watch him, you think to yourself, based on his responsibilities in the system, and they are vast in terms of defensively and less freedom in terms of offensive decision-making and things like that. If I was Kyle Turris, I'm not saying the way he's handled it hasn't been very, you know, hasn't been, handled it in the proper manner. But I will say this. I can see where he's coming from playing in that suffocating system. Dave Tippett's system minimizes the ability of an offensive player to utilize his skills in a proactive manner.
Right, and I would agree with that. And the unfortunate thing for Kyle Turris is even though he was a fourth overall pick and he had a great junior career, he hasn't done much at the NHL level.
But I think what Richard's point is that system doesn't give him the opportunity to do anything. He was playing fourth line for the most part, or fourth line minutes as he was getting his legs under him. It was his first game of the year on Thursday night.
Yep.
But you can definitely see that he's got some talent.
He looked okay.
I thought he looked okay also.
Richie, even if he's obviously playing on the fourth line because it was his first game.
Yeah.
But even if he was playing on the first line, you're right. There is no creativity. The Phoenix Coyotes system, I mean, you talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning and their 1-3-1, the Phoenix Coyotes system is almost worse and more defensive than
0-0-5.
I
could count on one hand how many times they threw two forecheckers into the offensive zone. Yeah. One hand I could count, and it wasn't over three.
It wasn't over, and that's when they're down by a goal. I mean, it was a really dull
game. Exactly right, Drew.
It was the most boring game we've seen all year on Thursday night. I mean, it worked out well, and now we won.
That was the worst home game. That was the most boring home. The worst game of the year was Columbus-Winnipeg, which was, I still want those 3 hours back.
It was unwatchable, that
but
game.
But the Phoenix game is, Winnipeg played it how they have to.
Yeah.
But and they won the game. But yes, Phoenix, it was Phoenix, because Winnipeg's played a lot of exciting games. It's Phoenix made the game boring, and Winnipeg ended up winning. But I find it interesting when people say, even Claude Noel, you know, we played a lot better defensive game on Thursday than we did on Tuesday. Maybe, but
I mean, it's hard not to play a good defensive game against Phoenix.
Yeah, like, you know, play a good defensive game against an offensive team like Washington, which they did.
Yeah.
And then I'll think, okay, you played a good defensive game, but Phoenix, like, I know this team has won, but this is what's wrong with the game. The way Dave Tippett was coaching that team is what's wrong with the game.
But that's the only way they can be successful, so what do you want them to do?
That's true, but I'll tell you one thing. Let me ask you this. I mean, winning brings fans, sure.
Yep.
If you're a fan of Phoenix.
And that's how they're winning. Why would you go?
It's unwatchable hockey.
I can't imagine watching that 41
exactly.
times
you,
a year.
You pay your $100, $200 to go see last night's or Thursday's game, and you say, oh, you know, big atmosphere, the Jets play Phoenix, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Say you're in Phoenix, and you have to, imagine we've already played them twice and it's over. The Jets have played them twice and it's over. Imagine having to play that team, or watch that team play, two more times this year, as if they're in the, you know, because next year we might be in
their division. Your point is, imagine having to watch that team on a regular basis.
Yeah, and guys, I agree with you.
Two times was too many.
God. I think the hockey is boring, the style that they play, even though it's very effective. And I'll play the devil's advocate here for a second. With the players that they have, the salary structure that they have, which they obviously don't spend a lot of money, they've built their team, like Richie said, plugging in veterans and basically relying on goaltending and a very tight defensive system, they work well with what they have. And that's not saying that it's not boring. I'm just saying that it does work for them.
And they do.
Unfortunately, people don't go to games to see what's effective. People want to see exciting goals. People want to see fights, except for the people that don't like fights. And they want to see excellent goaltending. And you're right. It's a strategy that minimizes your ability to lose exactly.
That's what it is. I mean, you see their power play is terrible. Why? Because they don't have any talent. I mean, they don't have any top-end talent for the most part. So their power play isn't very good. Their penalty killing, the teachable aspects of the game, were what the NHL has made us believe are teachable aspects of the game, a.k.a. defense, they're very good at. Again, I talk about it a lot. Why can't we teach offense? Why can't we be more creative in our offense, in the offensive part of the game? And I think that there's a lot of factors into that, and we can evaluate that in another philosophical conversation. But overall, I think just watching that game, and you mentioned it, Drew, and I think that was the biggest point. Down one goal, they hardly were changing their system.
Yeah, well, they didn't. They were like, okay, we're prepared to lose by one goal, but we're not going to change who we are. I said to Laura, I was in my seat, so I said to Laura, okay.
Let's qualify who Laura is for the listeners.
Well, they know who Laura is, my fiance, but...
My
fiance.
Okay.
I said to Laura with about 10 minutes to go, okay, well, they're down one goal, they're going to have to change their system. And then I said to her with about 2 minutes to go, I'm like, I can't believe this. They haven't changed their system.
With 3 minutes to go, I noticed on a kind of a opportunity to forecheck, they kind of had two guys in, although the second guy was kind of backing off, and the third guy was already high in the zone. And I'm thinking to myself, can't put three guys in deep to try and get some kind of sustained forecheck here, down a goal with 2 minutes left?
It was bizarre. It's a bizarre way of playing the game. I mean, it's okay, we gave up a goal, or we don't have the lead. Looks like we might have to lose this game. It's almost what their system...
Well, it wasn't that so much as, I think it's more so the perspective of, we're going to bank on a mistake from the other team. And if the team doesn't make a mistake, which the Jets, again, they did. The Jets played it how they should.
Yep.
But you see, and the Jets kind of played against Ottawa. I mean, the Jets seem to, from what I can gather so far, they play more so to the other team than the other team plays to them.
I agree with that. Yep.
Yeah.
And the good teams don't change what they do from game to game.
That takes time.
And the Detroit Red Wings don't change what they do based on who they play.
That's right. You make the other team play your game as opposed to you playing the other team.
Noel needs a lot more time to be able to have that kind of instill that kind of idea and systematic
philosophy
and
attitude.
Yeah,
I can keep going if you want. We got about another three and a half hours. I can start doing this.
I think mastering the system. Basically, what I'm saying, it takes so long to do that, and sometimes I don't know. I like a team like Detroit, and I thought it was a pleasure actually to. And I know people were disappointed that they blew the 4-3 lead against Ottawa, but I thought watching Ottawa play hockey was a pleasure because Paul McLean coaches similar to the style that they used in Detroit.
He brought that over,
and the puck moves, and the puck's going, and the defense are going, and you don't know who's coming from where, and they're going to speed up the transition. And I know they have more talent. Don't get me wrong, but it was the way he coached.
I don't remember which goal it was.
Didn't do that last year with similar talent.
I think it might have been the 4-all goal, the goal that made the game 4-all win. Okay. I think that was the goal where all five guys on the ice for Ottawa touched the puck. Just rapid fire, bang, bang, bang,
nicest
bang,
goal
bang.
I've seen against
and then
year.
Spezza with the beautiful shot. I mean, the puck was just moving constantly.
Right. That's right.
And I mean, you know, and that was just a beautiful way to play. Watch them play
and
hockey.
Hey, that's
Erik Karlsson is a special hockey player.
A best player on the ice. That wasn't, it was best player on the ice. Him and Evander Kane.
And that system, but getting back to the comparisons between Ottawa and New Jersey, that system is allowing Zach Smith to be successful, whereas in Phoenix, a guy like Michael Bodker or Kyle Turris, more offensive players, are not able to have that success because of the system, which is based around defense, defense, defense. Let's try to bore the other team to death by tight checking them, and that's fine. That's all fine and
dandy. They bring in slow skaters, too. I mean, you look at Phoenix, Lankow has lost his step.
They bring in fringe guys who can't sign anywhere else.
Even if they are, there were guys who were really good players who aren't great skaters. Lankow, not a great skater. Ray Whitney, never a great skater, but obviously lost a little bit of a step.
You know, you have Taylor Pyatt, and you have guys who can move to an extent. I mean, the guys like Korpikoski, guys who are a little more active in skating, are few and far between on that roster, so it makes it even more boring.
He plays to their strengths, which aren't many, so that's why he clamps down and plays a very defensive style. Let's go to break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about some more about the Jets Devils. We have some audio from practice earlier today, all things of that nature. You're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mr. Lube Game Day on TSN 1290. Puck drop 6 o'clock at MTS Center with Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, and Shane Knighty, Rick Ralph, and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show, 5 o'clock on the station. Hustler and Lawless follow us at 3. I think later on in the program we're going to answer the question of what actually happened to Hustler's ribs.
We need to ask that. Who's doing the game on CBC tonight?
I saw Kevin Weeks there, so yeah. Wouldn't that mean that
he's doing
Mark Lee?
That's right.
Be doing the game?
That's good. Winnipegger.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I said hi to Kevin Weeks. Big fan of his commentary.
You said hi. He got out of restraining order. You know, the usual.
Former New Jersey Devil.
Yes,
right.
It's very true.
Former Stanley Cup winner on Carolina.
Was he?
Was he not on that team?
No, it was
Warden.
No, Warden Urbe. Wasn't it Warden Urbe?
I think it was Warden Urbe.
Urbe was in 06? I apologize to Kevin Weeks. I thought he was the backup in Carolina that year.
I think it was Warden Urbe. He played in Tampa. He played in Florida. Okay.
He was a backup in Carolina.
Played in Vancouver. Where else did he play?
Devils.
Yeah, Devils. You said that already.
Is that five teams? I think there's like one more in there.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. Remus is saying Rangers. Was he on the Rangers?
Yeah, he was.
The
Rangers, yep.
Anyways. So you were at practice today, and just a quick update on that. Looks like no Antropov. It sounds like it's going to be the same lineup as Thursday night's game. No Antropov for the Jets today. No Fair for the Jets tonight.
Yeah, I was telling you guys before we went on air, Toby Enstrom was at practice wearing his red jersey, Richie, but we're not expecting him back for quite a while.
Well, originally they had thought, I think, it was mid-December, but recently we've been hearing
mid-January.
It's more like early to mid-January.
Yeah, and so Enstrom was practicing with Charlie Huddy. Randy Jones will be back before that, but he was also wearing the red jersey.
What color jersey was Charlie Huddy wearing?
The Jets jacket. And Brett Festerling, who's expected to possibly come back against Carolina or Boston, He will be eligible. He was wearing a blue jersey. He was out there late practicing.
I love how people are talking about like Randy Jones and Festerling as if they're much of
an upgrade over Flood and Kolda.
Yeah, I don't even know if they would get in over Flood. I mean, the way
Flood and Kolda have been playing, I held my breath.
Tailed off a little bit, but
yeah, they haven't been bad though.
No,
they've been better than I thought they would be.
Flood's been better than Kolda, and I guess the thinking is the guy that's gonna drop out will be Kolda.
But let's talk. And I know people don't want to talk about more of a long term development process, and I realize AHL is important, but Flood and Kolda have been playing well. Jones and Festerling are both kind of middling veteran types who play.
Jones got the one way contract though.
Right,
but so he'd be the guy if he comes back.
So you keep Matt seven defensemen. And you keep
Martin Gerber, by the way, was the backup in Carolina
that's
in 06.
Right. Yes, that's right.
And apparently Kevin Weeks was the backup in 02.
You want to know why no one remembered that,
backing
Drew?
Up Urbe.
You want to know why no one remembered that? Because Cam Ward was unbelievable, and Martin Gerber didn't play a single game. So
after the first round, I thought, wasn't it?
Big shot. Big thank you to Tyson D42 for that information.
Tyson D, thank you very much, my man.
Yeah. No.
You and Tyson D are tight, eh?
We've never met, but
now you're tight.
When I respect someone and they do something nice and they're, you know, cool guy, you get the my man.
Do you have a footprint on your shoulder? What is on your shoulder?
What are you talking about?
Yeah, what is that? It's dirt.
Why do you have dirt on your shirt?
We talked about this before the show. I'm wearing the Illegal Curve polo, which isn't available to the public. I don't really know how to wash dark clothes. For some reason, I always get those dust bunnies all over them. It's not a footprint.
It's probably because you rub it up against your car that hasn't been washed since 2007.
It's true.
Hey, I took it to Midtown about a month ago.
Okay, that's nice. Anyways,
Hey, I was talking hockey, and then
I noticed it. You
had the ADD over here looking at my shirt.
Did somebody walk on your shoulder earlier today? It's like, what is going on there?
Yes, I've joined the circus.
Anyone here a marine biologist?
Cirque du Soleil? Cirque de Aze?
It's not bad.
That's not bad. Thank you.
It's good shtick.
Thank you. Anyways, so, I mean, Flood and Kolda, you're talking about long-term development.
Why not keep them in there? I mean, it's like Enstrom's back, not like Hainty's back. Considerable upgrades on the back end. You could argue they're upgrades or not upgrades, but I don't have any problem with them keeping it as it is. And again, I'm just pointing out the fact that so many injuries. A lot of people
you know, they don't really count these guys in the top eight or the top six. As soon as they get injured, we have six injuries. Not it's the press more so. We have six injuries on the back end. It's
Mark Flood played for the Moose last year and did a really good job. And I'll be the first to say that he has done a very, very well job.
Done a very, very good job.
I guess, well, job.
I tell you what, you're regressing in your butchering of the English language on a regular basis.
Funny, I took 2 years of journalism. I don't think it really did that much. In fact, it made me more of a desecrator of the English language.
Well put. Do we want to go to the Klingberg audio?
Yeah, let's go. So Dave Manuka of IllegalCurve.com fame, who...
My boy.
Actually, yeah, your boy. Exactly.
My man.
Your man.
My main man. Dave M. is my main man.
Wow, that's bold statement.
Well, Richie's my main man, usually, but Dave's usurped.
Dave's usurped Richie?
He's my life mentor.
Anyways, Dave's had a chance to talk with Carl Klingberg earlier today at practice. Let's go to that audio.
So, Carl, how did you feel about your first game as a Jet?
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, the crowd is crazy, and... Felt good to be on the ice, and felt pretty good on the for me too on that out there. And yeah, we had some good things going on there in our line, and hope to bring that today again.
Where's your you played about 6 minutes, I think, of the game total. Do you think your minutes will pick up a little bit, and or are you able to work within whatever the coach is willing to give you?
I mean, it depends. If I play good, or maybe we will get some more minutes, but. What I'm trying to focus on is just play my game, and if it's good and the coach likes it, he will put me out there, and it's nothing I can do more than just to be as good as possible at every shift and to see how far that takes me.
Did you notice a big adjustment, though, coming from St. John's and playing in the AHL to your first game playing, obviously, with the Jets in the NHL?
Yeah, it's, it's a lot better players here. The skating is a lot faster, and the puck's going faster. So everything is a lot faster, and I mean, it's the best league in the world, and of course, it's a lot faster. I mean,
no, of course, not only did you come into the your first game here in Winnipeg, but you came in against the former Winnipeg Jets, the Jets 1.0, as they're often called. So that added an even, kind of crazier element. What did you think of the crowd? I mean, the crowd's generally nuts, but it was even more so on Thursday. What was your impression being on the ice?
Yeah, that was awesome. I mean, I'm used to a really good crowd in the St. John's, too. And it's packed there, and we only have 6,000 seats there, and it's packed, and it's a small arena, so it's very loud, but I couldn't imagine we would be so loud here. 15,000 fans is nuts, and that was awesome to play here. I mean, I've never played for a louder home game crowd before. That was awesome.
What's the reaction to the fact that you're playing in the NHL back home in Sweden? Are people tuning in? Are they able to follow what you're doing here in Winnipeg?
Yeah, they are. I mean, that I'm called up, that's on the news back home, and some people have congratulated me, and that's good, of course, and you can follow the games there if you have some right channels on the TV, or you can just watch them streaming online, and some of my closest friends and my family do that, so they can see me out there too, and that's good.
Do you have anybody, is there any plans for any family to come watch you here in Winnipeg or in St. John's?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I want my family and friends to come here and see me be out there, and we'll see about that. I mean, they got jobs back in Sweden. They can't just leave like that. And so we'll see about that, but I hope so.
They have jobs back in Sweden.
Exactly. I'm glad that Carl Klingberg's family is employed.
Hold on. Is Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com moving to Sweden?
I think he might be.
Dave Manuk is recession-proof.
Yeah.
That's a good line. He's recession-proof. Let's talk about that fourth line, because it was certainly a bit of a makeshift line with Fair and Antropov being out and continue to be out. So you have Klingberg, you have Stapleton,
and you have
Jason Jaffrey. Mm-hmm. Yep. They only played, I don't know exactly what they played. I suspect it was about 5 minutes or so.
Klingberg only played 5 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking for them in the third period. I don't think they had one shift in the third period. So the Jets really shrank their bench on Thursday night against Phoenix. But I thought in the 5 minutes they were on the ice, they were responsible.
Yep.
They were, they did exactly what they forechecked hard.
Was Stapleton's 2-on-1, was that a 5-on-5?
I think it was a 5-on-5. Yeah. I don't think it was
third period.
I don't think it was in the third, anyway, but I could be wrong. Their played their minutes exactly how Coach Noel would want them to play their minutes. Energetic, forechecking, and without
doing anything really in addition to the absolute basics.
Klingberg moves his feet a lot, gets it on the forecheck. That's what they want him to do. I thought they played fine. I didn't have an issue with it. Yeah. I thought overall that they weren't a negative force, considering they were, as you mentioned, probably makeshift line and probably hadn't played together.
Ever, yeah. Maybe. The Jets are really thin right now up front. They were probably thin at the beginning of the year when everyone's healthy.
Yes.
But they're really thin right now. Yeah. They're missing Fair, who obviously, you know, I don't want to say damaged goods.
He re-aggravated his injury, though.
Is that what it was? Is there any clarification on what the injury is?
That's what the Jets are saying now.
Okay, well, that's the case, yeah. Damaged goods would probably be a good way to put it.
Which is sort of what everyone knew because they got him for so cheap yes. in the offseason.
Exactly
is that
right.
This is a guy who's got a chronic shoulder problem, and it's going to be touch and go to see what level he can come back at.
If I recall correctly, I'm pretty sure he's had surgery on both shoulders.
That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, this is a guy who's got shoulder problems, and you have to sort of expect that going forward. Which is too bad, because he's certainly got a lot of talent.
It's similar to, you're in a hockey draft, and you draft the always injury-prone but talented player. You can't come back halfway through the season and say, my team's not very good because he's injured.
But I'm the guy who drafted Thomas Vanek, so I'm holding my breath every time the Sabres play.
No, but we're talking about the forward lines and that fourth line, and you're right. Klingberg, especially coming in, he's essentially replacing Fair, who wasn't playing on the top two lines.
Right, it was, yeah.
And Antropov, I think, has missed more because Fair's only played, he only played three games, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's
by far. Antropov certainly
Fair,
missed
Fair
a lot
was
more.
Essentially only playing, he was playing a little bit more. But as far as the forward line go, Brian Little and Evander Kane have been unbelievable. They're scoring at a point per game
doing
very well. Yeah. And I think that right now, better time for this to happen. And I think the GST line, Tanner Glass, Chris Thorburn, and Jim Slater were back together. They played well like they always do, crashing and banging and chipping in the odd offense when they can. But that line with Evander Kane and Brian Little, specifically them on that line, they seem to be working just unbelievably right now.
Well, I mean,
It's night and day, Richie, from the first 10 or 11 games to now.
Let me ask you this. Kane in the first 10 game grouping, if you want to break it down into eight parts, in the first 10 games of the season.
Hang on, are you going to talk about Evander Kane's ice temp?
I'm going to talk about a lot of things about Evander Kane.
Okay, let's go to break. I want to come back on the other side and talk about...
You're doing a lot of pointing right now, Drew.
Well, I want to come back on the other side and talk about Evander Kane and the role that he's playing on this team.
You say I have a Kane bias?
I'm saying you have a Kane bias, but I think it's a perfectly legitimate bias.
I have a Richie bias, meaning he's my boy.
There you go. And so is Tyson D42, just tweeted at us and said, me and Ezzy just became best friends, LMAO. You're listening to...
LMFAO coming up December 14th at the MTS Center.
MTS Center. You're listening to Mr. Loop Game Day on TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jets Devils tonight at 6 o'clock here on Mr. Lube. Game day on TSN 1290. Rick Ralph with the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 5 o'clock. Hustler and Lawless right after us at 3 o'clock.
Rick Ralph's coming on at 2:15 too.
That's right.
And he's bringing Sexy back.
As he's bringing Sexy back?
Rick Ralph is.
Oh, okay. They're both. That's a lot of Sexy coming back then. Anyways, let's talk about Evander Kane, Richard. You do have an Evander Kane bias, and it's shown.
Do I?
It came shining through in your selection of the three stars at Thursday night's game.
Richie also has an Evander Kane jersey.
I don't have a jersey. Nor do I think I have a bias.
I don't. It's a fair bias. I'm not saying that it's a negative bias. I don't think all bias has to be negative. I'm not sure about that officially. But I don't think it's a negative bias. Evander Kane is the best Winnipeg Jets player, and you want to see him on the ice more.
I do.
Would that sum up your argument?
It's a positive bias, isn't it? That's what you're saying.
That's a simple explanation for probably a more complicated situation.
Well, let's try and make it as complicated as possible, then.
Well, I mean, Evander Kane right now is not playing as much as he was last year, and that's what's concerning to me.
What's he averaging right now?
I mean, it's basically the same, but he's
17 or 18 minutes?
Playing 11 seconds less during even strength time.
Okay,
and he's playing 7 seconds less on the power play. Sorry, excuse me, I'm looking at the wrong stats.
He's looking at Patrick Kane. Our apologies.
I'm preparing an article for LegalCurve.com about Evander Kane and needing to get him signed. And within the article, which hopefully will be ready by Monday, I compare him to John Tavares, a player who was drafted three slots ahead of him in the 2009 entry draft. Let me get back to that, Drew. He's playing 41 seconds less a game on even strength, so about a shift less, and he's playing the exact same amount of time on the power play. And my concern is this. Why is he not playing more on the power play? Why is he not on the first power play unit consistently? Like, for example, 2 games ago, I believe it was against Ottawa, when they called
the 5-on-3.
That got
your blood boiling a little bit.
Oh yeah, you know, you play a minute and a half, and then you call timeout, and you put the same unit on, and Kane doesn't get the ice. Well, he's your best player. He's got to be on the ice.
Let's go back to that. It was a 5-on-3 for the Jets, and the forward group that they put out to start was, I believe, Burmistrov.
No, it wasn't. It was Ladd, Antropov. I think it was Bufflin, Wellwood.
I'm just talking about forward groups. So was it Ladd, Antropov, and Wellwood?
Yes, and
Bufflin and Bogosian at the back end.
And it might have been Little. I forget who was it. Kane wasn't on there in any event.
Anyway, so then the Jets had some good sustained pressure.
Yeah, the 5-on-3.
Yeah, well, as you would expect, whistle in the play. Coach Noel called a timeout.
Yeah,
and as everyone knows, the only timeout they have all game. And he came back. I don't think that's fine, personally.
I don't think it's fine either if Kane's not on to begin with to keep him on.
Okay, but then so they call timeout and he puts back on the same line that he started the 5-on-3 with. Long story short, the Jets don't capitalize on that 5-on-3. They lose their timeout. They don't have that timeout that could have helped them certainly at the end of the game.
Fair enough. That's fair.
To me, that struck me as a.
But why is Evander Kane not on the first power play unit?
Well, let's answer that question. Why isn't Evander Kane on the first line? Most, to the most untrained eye, you could probably see that he brings the complete package to the game, and he's the Jets' best player.
He's the best player. He doesn't pass, but he's the best player.
I mean, he's got a shot that... I mean, the only reason Brian Little scored on Thursday night is because Evander Kane rang the shot. He beat Mike Smith clean, rang it off the post, and and Little had some fancy footwork to put it in the net.
To my point before, and we'll get back to what we're speaking about right now, but this is within the same, stratosphere of conversation. You know, what was Brian Little doing? And the odds were obviously on Brian Little's side to get going again, but what was Brian Little doing before playing with Evander Kane? And what was Burmistrov, what was he doing when he was playing with Evander Kane? To me, it's who's playing with Evander Kane is driving the offense. And if that's the case, Evander Kane is driving the offense.
And Richie, to support your point, to supplement your point, I do think Evander Kane, right now, where we're at, 25 games into the season, right? Evander Kane is our best forward. And people were saying Burmistrov and Antropov were our best forwards. No, they were doing a good job. But Evander Kane is our best forward offensively. And I think that if, just looking at the ice time, his most ice time this year was a little bit higher than I thought. His most ice time was against the Devils that game we were at, 24 minutes. So I guess is he averaging total a little bit closer to 20 minutes?
No, he's not.
Or is it more 15, 16, something like
he's
that?
He's averaging under 17 minutes a game.
Okay, so
how many minutes should a guy like Evander Kane in his third year in the NHL now, how many minutes do you think he should be averaging per game?
Well, first off, if he's on the first power play unit, he gets more minutes.
Right.
That's, to me, is an obvious one. He needs to be on the first power play unit.
Yep.
And then you need to get him in a shift or two extra on an even strength and get him up to 20 minutes or 19 to 20 minutes a game.
And Richie is right. His speed, his skating ability is ridiculous. I remember at the skills competition, he there was a false start problem or whatever, and he didn't get his time, and then so he went again, and a couple of the Jets threw a water bottle at him as a joke, and he still tied, I believe it was Stapleton.
Yeah, yeah.
His skill level is ridiculous, and he does need to be more out there, more on the power play, and he is driving the line. I agree, the Little line. I agree with everything Richie's saying, and for whatever reason, he's not being played a little bit, and as much as he was last year, and he should not only be playing as much as he was last year, he should be playing more, like Richie said.
And the point is, if you're going to get, Ladd is ahead of him in the pecking order, blah, 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 sure, whatever, we could debate that for a while.
Ladd shouldn't be. I mean, Ladd himself, you probably gave him truth serum, would say Kane is more talented than I am.
Yeah, but I'm saying the point is, Drew, that Ladd can play in front of the net on the power play and get those shots from the close, from in close, and Kane can play with him on the power play. You don't need to just be left winger on the power play. They can both be on there. I mean, my question is, again, getting back on the Kyle Wellwood train. I mean, and I respect what he's done. He's done a very good job. But, I mean, you're going to give Kyle Wellwood those minutes that you could give to Evander Kane. I realize Kyle Wellwood is more of a passer, and he finds holes, blah, blah, blah. Especially in a 5-on-3 when there's no fighting on the boards. He doesn't get out-muscled. He's probably more effective. Even so, I mean, long-term.
Well, that line, that Wellwood, Burmistrov, Ladd line, which has been together now for a couple games.
Without Antropov
around. I mean, you got two guys on that line in Burmistrov and Wellwood who do not have good shots.
Yes, that's exactly right.
And you know, I mean,
Lads isn't great either.
Well, yeah, it's not. I mean, but at least he
it's not bad.
At
it's
least
not
he
great.
Takes. I mean, yeah. Burmistrov, you know, doesn't have a great shot, but he's very strong on the puck, and he's, you know, solid with his skating is beautiful and everything else.
Yep.
Wellwood is just. I mean, he's had a very good start to the year. And everything
he's
else.
He's got very good hockey sense.
And he's good hockey sense, and he seems to be in the right spot at the right time
good
in terms
stick
of
handler.
Putting the puck in the net. But on the boards, just I mean, his effort is minimal.
Well, yeah, there is no effort. There,
and, I mean, he's got no shot. He doesn't even bother to even attempt the shot.
Drew, the point is...
You can really... I'm saying that you can defend against that line because you know what those guys are coming at you with, and it's
off,
not a lot.
You play off of them, yeah.
Yeah,
you mentioned that Antropov is injured. When he comes back, he goes back on the second line. That is the second line. They should be getting second line minutes. The top line is Kane, Little, Wheeler.
Absolutely, and the second line
should be getting more minutes.
And Wellwood should be moved down. I mean, I think
but it's less of an issue, guys, again. I mean, if you're going to be rolling three lines all the time, then everybody's going to get their time, then whoever the other team plays. But it's the power play.
Oh, yeah, power play, you have to have your best players out on the power play, and Kane's your best player. So it doesn't make any sense. But going back to the lines for a minute, I think that Coach Noel would actually prefer to see Thorburn play more of a fourth line role as opposed to being on the third line with the GST line.
Sure.
I think that's where he would prefer it. Maybe see Wellwood with Glass and Slater, something like that, as opposed to...
But then, and I understand your point, Drew, and I wouldn't blame him for that, but then your problem is, you know, where it seems like the best... They have so many chances from that line come off the forecheck, and then, you know, they curl on the left side, and Slater hits the top of the circle and hits a one-timer, and he's scored from there, and they've created chances off there.
Yep.
So what I'm saying is their chances generally, aside from Slater a couple times down the right side, haven't come off the rush. They've been more sustained pressure, and if they're going to try and sustain pressure, what does that mean? That means like that Glass, Slater, and Thorburn are forechecking. If you take out one huge aspect, because Thorburn, for all of his flaws, is very good along the boards.
Mm-hmm.
You take that out and you put him with Wellwood, who can't do anything on the boards, you've changed the dynamic of the line, and you very well may have changed the chemistry and productivity.
I'm not saying that it's the decision I necessarily agree with. It just seems to be what Coach Noel would prefer. Because when everybody was healthy, when Antropov and Fair were healthy, he had moved Thorburn down to the fourth line, or what we're calling the fourth line, mm-hmm. and he had some flexibility there on that third line.
Yeah, Fair makes more sense
And Richie, even though I think that there's a lot of movement amongst forward lines around the NHL, I think it is important for the Jets to establish these lines and keep them. Noel has said repeatedly he's not afraid to do that. And I think that was before when Evander Kane wasn't going. Now Evander Kane he's going, and he's getting scoring opportunities. He's getting, you know, 5 to 7 shots a game. And I think that is important. I mean, in when you have the luxury of a lot of talent, more talent, whether it's Detroit or Chicago, maybe you can move guys around a little bit more on the third and fourth lines, but I don't think that's really... I think once you get... Now you're 25 games into the season, start playing Kane, Little, and Wheeler more and reward them for the way they're playing. Wheeler's been better. He's only still got a couple of goals, but aside from that, he's been better. Little's been better because he's been...
Cotty needs to shoot.
That might be the case.
Wheeler has a confidence problem, too.
And Little is definitely getting more points because of Kane's ability
Little's had, I think, 12 points in 12 in the last 12 games.
And we mentioned before they made the move that we thought that... Remember, we talked about this weeks ago, about how the speed element together would be dangerous.
And it has been. I mean, it's proven to be dangerous. I mean, you watch Blake Wheeler play, and it's... Boy, is it a little bit frustrating at times. The guy just doesn't shoot the puck. He's in prime shooting position.
It doesn't, and it's a confidence issue, Drew, and it's a timing issue. It's sometimes you can't teach what to do at the right times, and he takes an extra second. And part of that is also confidence, and he doesn't have any for whatever reason. He seems like a kind of... I mean, these guys, to be honest with you, some of these guys need to get the heck off of the internet. I mean, they have to get off. Like, why?
Why are they on Twitter
because
and that sort of thing?
Because for all the positive reinforcement they're going to get, they're going to get a lot of negative comments as well. And I just wonder... And I know they try and be like normal people, but if you are, then have a different name and then just have your friends on there. Or just create an account and read what other people are saying. But essentially, if you're on there and you're trying to be communicating with the fans, if you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen. And I don't mean that offensively. I think that's a fact. If I was a management of this team, I mean, a guy like Kane thinks like everything just, you know, go, you know, it's like... Water off a duck's back. Is that the expression, Drew?
Yeah, that's the expression.
Yeah, and that's fine. He can deal with it. And he
seems like
he's
fueled by it. When he's playing this well, nobody's sending him anything critical.
Doesn't seem like he would care otherwise. A guy like Wheeler, who seems a little bit more sensitive, get him off. He doesn't need to be on Twitter. He doesn't need to be on these. You know, I think these guys open themselves up to too much criticism, and
And sometimes you're listening to the masses more so than playing and making your own decisions.
Haters gotta hate, is what you're saying.
You know,
But Thomas Friedman had a really interesting article about this in the New York Times a couple weeks ago, about how, and it's not necessarily exactly the point, but how leaders are reading too much into the polls instead of making decisions and then reading it. And I think what happens is, similarly, in this case, he's reading all these comments that he's receiving, and then it's affecting his play and affecting his decision making.
Drew, we gotta go to break, right?
Yeah.
Can we keep talking about this Twitter thing? Because I actually think I'd like to add a little bit to it. I think it's interesting, you know, the idea of athletes on Twitter, because I have something to say about
Let's talk about that. Yeah. It sounds reasonable. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This is Mr. Lube Game Day. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And you can go to www.IllegalCurve.com, where we have a live chat underway being moderated by Michael Remus. Let's continue on our conversation.
If he's moderating that chat, I'm scared for what's going on in that chat room. if he's the moderator, I'm just
doing
kidding.
He's doing a great job as always.
Of course he does. I'm just yanking his chain.
Bad expression.
Is it?
I just don't like it.
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense.
It isn't a great expression.
Yeah. Anyways, let's continue on with our talk. Yeah. You want to talk about athletes on Twitter.
Yeah, I want to talk about it. Richie got it going, and it got me thinking a little bit. You know what? Twitter has been huge for Illegal Curve. You know, we started the website in 07, and, you know, we've been doing this radio show for almost 3 years now, and Twitter's been huge. I mean, we've got a lot of followers, and we've used it to promote the radio show and communicate with people, and it's been amazing. I'm a huge fan of social media. I love Twitter, love Facebook, LinkedIn, everything, Friendster. I'm digressing a little bit.
Yeah,
Friendster. Getting back to Twitter specifically. Twitter is becoming the social media of choice in the world. It's you know, growing fast, and everyone is on there now. It seems like everyone and their grandfather. Well, actually, in Drew's case, Sheldon Mindell, his father, is now on Twitter. So we'll get that Twitter.
Focus.
We'll get that Twitter handle up after. A lot of the Jets are on Twitter, and I follow some of them. I know that I follow Tanner Glass and Andrew Ladd, and I do follow Blake Wheeler, who I believe his Twitter handle is Biggie Funk.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the problem is, though, it is a little bit in relation to what Richie said. I think you're tweeting things that are to do with your personal life and about the games. And I think, as far as I'm concerned, there is a huge problem, not just, and this doesn't just relate to athletes, it relates to public figures and entertainment figures. I think that you're not really realizing how many people are reading it, and the people that are reading it, Drew, is everybody. Even if you don't follow the guy, you can see what he's tweeted, or you're going to hear about it because now what newspapers and television stations do now is they actually incorporate tweets as really what the guy's thinking about the game. And I had to unfollow a few people. And I think that the main problem with athletes, and specifically the Jets and other NHL players on Twitter, is that they're saying things now about the game that you probably don't want people to know about your personal game. You can now read things.
I think so far though, and some, by the way, back to your previous point, somewhere Pauline Gretzky is nodding furiously right now.
Well, the point, yeah, Drew.
I follow her. I think she was the last person I followed.
I understand why.
Sorry, that was probably creepy. Because of the...
Yeah, we know why. Just move on from it.
I think the thing is, Drew, is if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, Mark Trittman, whoever it may be, and you want your goal is to have your players perform to the best of their abilities, you have to weigh in, and this is probably something that I don't know if it'll be built into contracts or not down the road, but I think it's something that you have to consider from both sides. I mean, if you're Blake Wheeler, for example, okay, and what do you get from Twitter? What are the positive, you know, ramifications from being on Twitter, and what are the negatives? And what outweighs the other? And if the negatives outweigh the positives, and you're being affected by it, whether you want to admit it or not, that's something that you probably don't want your player, who you're paying over $2 million to be a part of.
Especially because, I mean, you know, the beauty and the shame of Twitter, or anything really, social media, is it allows cowards who don't want to use their real name to say things that they wouldn't say normally.
And
which is the same thing about commenting on message boards and everything else along
it's
those
internet,
lines.
Yeah.
It's in the internet age, it's a way for cowards to be the big man on campus.
Everyone has a voice. Everyone has a voice on social media, even if you don't want to hear it.
But you know what? If you're not using your name, You know, I really have less respect for you if you're out there and you're tweeting something and you're not using your name.
Richie, I know you want to say something, but I just want to say one thing really quickly here about social media. Once again, I said that I really enjoy Twitter and I tweet all the time, and I think you guys do too. And we're in a day and age when a lot of people who really didn't like to do that stuff do now because they realize that it's valuable for whatever personal or professional reasons. And I'm not advocating that players shouldn't be on Twitter. I just find I'm not going to follow a guy when I know that a lot of the comments that are being directed at him or comments that are being made have really aren't adding any value to it. I read the newspaper and I watch TV to hear things that are actually going to give added value to that player, some insight or something. But when, like you said, there's people that are just, you know, criticizing someone or basically asking nonsensical questions.
Or
what's the real value of Twitter?
Yeah. Or there's players who are told on there to get on there because of their agents to make more money.
That's right. Well, I mean, would anybody in this room know who Paul Bissonnette is normally?
And that's just it.
He didn't play when they were here.
Of course, he's a fringe NHLer at best. Yeah. But he's
and he tweets about that, by the way.
Yeah, which is fun, which is makes him funny. But I mean, there's a million and a half other Paul Bissonnettes out there who nobody ever really knows about because they're not on Twitter or anything.
I mean, he's funny and all that, but does he provide any insight into the actual behind the scenes hockey stuff? No, he just talks like a guy.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. He sounds like a 20 exactly a guy with some money and everything else.
And people glorify them, and that's fine. I just find, generally speaking, I find players unfollowable because I find that they don't provide any kind of insight into anything. But I'm talking from another perspective here, and that's management and how they want to take into account what their players are doing on there. A, do they trust them to make good judgments?
Once you hit send, it's forever.
That's one thing you've seen other players in other sports realize. I don't realize what I'm sending. Because you're sending it to one. If you have five followers and a radio station picks it up, well, there you go. The world's going to hear it.
That's right.
And what's the benefits of that? And are you on there to gather attention, or are you on there because you want to use Twitter? Because they can sometimes be mutually exclusive. If you want to follow people and find it interesting, you don't need to put your own name out there and always tweet about it. But it's also we're in a day and age where all anybody ever wants is attention.
Well, you know, go to a guy like Blake Wheeler's Twitter page. Or any professional athlete's Twitter page, and if they have a bad game or they do something to mess up or they do anything,
but
really,
Drew, at the same time
on the other side,
contrast that when you're tweeting out where should I eat everybody, then you better take it when you get it. That's what I'm saying.
Exactly, which is your point is very good. Is you have to balance the pros to the cons. But a guy like Blake Wheeler, you go through his Twitter page, the amount of people that are hating on him. I mean, is absurd.
But when you want to ask where you should go eat, and 30 people are I'm not saying these people are morally right. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, when you're asking for attention, when you have to
accept the negative attention when it comes your way
because
also.
Because he could just say to his teammate, oh, where should I go? Or go to somebody on the corner and say, you know, where would be a good place to eat?
Wouldn't you guys say that, I don't know the answer to this. I'm not sure if the Jets have a social media policy, but I do know that other teams in the NHL do.
Well, the NHL has a social media policy regarding when the players, you know, players can't tweet 60 minutes before the game and 90 minutes after the game or whatever exactly is.
Okay, well, how about instead of fixating on the policy and what you shouldn't tweet, maybe we should be talking about the basic idea of having a Twitter account instead of focusing on don't say anything that'll offend anybody. Well, how about just thinking about if you have a Twitter account, and these guys are NHL players, people are looking up to them, and they're going to have a lot more followers than I have, just for that basic reason. People are they're in the spotlight, so you just have to think about that itself. You're going to be on Twitter, so if you're going to be on Twitter, you got to know that if you have a bad game, and then you say that you're going out after, that might put you, you know, at risk.
People are
going
to hate on you.
So it's not necessarily, you know, being politically correct in what you're tweeting, Richie. It's just the fact that you're having a bad game. But he has the time to tweet about having a good time at this or that place. I mean, that's a huge part of it now. It's not just what you're saying, because you are right.
If you wouldn't go up to a guy and tell him to his face that, boy, you suck last night, why should you do it on Twitter?
It's pretty cowardly.
Why should you do it on Twitter? It's just not, I mean, it's not classy. I know that people do it. We know some of the people who are doing it under aliases. And part of the time when I see, oh, well, I know who that guy is who's under there as a completely random Twitter name.
You're going to get Twitter, you're going to get hate. I mean, we get hate.
Yeah, of course we get hate. Yeah. And I mean, most of the time we just
sort of... You get hate in your heart, let it out.
We schluff it off and we laugh about it. But I mean, It's mind-boggling that, you know...
I would rather get someone, and people have told me that I'm annoying and I'm stupid, which is,
there's,
you know,
one guy
fine.
Who hates on us for mentioning the GST line all the time.
Right, and that's fine, but I would prefer that than eggs in the winter on the windows.
That's true.
I've gotten that, too. That I would chicken delight on my car once.
That would clean your car, considering the stain that you have on your shirt right now. You got to be talking chicken. To coaches after?
Yeah, we're going to talk
to someone
coaches.
Someone threw chicken delight on my car in the winter, and it froze. It was... You know, we don't have to dwell on it, but it was terrible. I couldn't clean it. Even I got a car wash.
The question is this.
Did you eat the chicken?
That's right.
Yeah, I ate the chicken, Drew.
And that chicken
is that what you
business.
Want to hear? You want to publicly mock me?
I think I just have done publicly.
Should have just done that on Twitter.
Exactly. Now, you can, if you want to publicly mock Ezzy on Twitter, he's at ICEzzyG. I'm at ICDrew, and Richie's at ICRichieP.
No, but
this is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. At Illegal Curve, you're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day on TSN 1290.